Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had 3 jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
Welcome to J is for Justice podcast. If live breaking news and following true crime is your thing, then please consider subscribing to my channel. And if you like what you see in my videos, please consider giving them a thumbs up. Hey guys, everybody, welcome in. Thanks for joining us this Saturday night. I'm so glad you guys are here. I know there's a million places you guys could be tonight, but you are right here. And I thank you for that. I have two very special guests that are on stage with me right now. And I'm not going to waste a lot of time because we're going to get to it. There's a lot of information. There's a lot they're going to go over with us. So I want to get right into it. But please do hit that like button. And I mean, just come into this with an open mind. Come into this. This is all we ask, is that you come in with an open mind, with all of the theories set aside that you've ever heard about this case, and listen to Frank and listen to Jim with an open mind. And we're going to be sharing their links. Hey, Desiree. I told them they had a few fans that were going to be showing up tonight. I bet you they're flattered. Hello, Miss Sherry. All right, guys, I'm going to go ahead and bring them in. This is a, you know, sensitive topic. So if you are easily triggered, just so you know, if you need to pause, take a break, do what you need to do, because it's a tough case. It's a tough subject, and that's it. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring these guys on in. Welcome to the panel, Frank and Jim.
Hey, good evening, Jay.
Good evening, Jay. Thanks for having us on. We appreciate it.
Oh, I'm absolutely flattered to have you guys on. These are the Zell brothers, as I've been calling them. And we'll have, that's who they are. So these guys have investigated on the JonBenet Ramsey case for 28 years. Is that right? 28?
Yep.
Going on this December will be the end of year 28, going into 29.
Wow. Well, first off, I want to thank you for coming on today. Secondly, I want to thank you for your perseverance in this case. You know, I'm really excited to share with everybody your theory and what you guys have uncovered, you know, all these years. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves, where we can find you if we have any follow-up questions. Frank, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, me and my brother, you know, born and raised, you know, in New Jersey. We're just two regular guys, and, you know, we're nothing special, but we kind of started on this case, and We just got hooked on it, and we've been nonstop for the last 28 years. Boy, time flies. Jim, you want to say anything about you?
No, it's you had to have a little bit of a stick-to-itiveness, right, to this case. But it's like when you're digging up things and you're seeing that what you're finding, you're digging deeper, you're finding truth. That kind of keeps you going. And our theory, as we're going to talk about as the show goes on, we were finding ourselves, we were proving it true. That's what kept us motivated, is that we were digging up more information, and it just went over years. And information, we just didn't pile up like every day. It took years to build up sources with this. But as my brother said, we're just two regular Joes that just happened to not just research a case, but actually just ran a parallel investigation. What the police weren't doing, we did.
Yeah. People ask us all the time, during the course of 28 years, it's like, who are you guys? Are you guys former cops? Are you private investigators? And the best way we can describe it is that we're investigative journalists that don't write, and we're cops without badges. And when they ask us why we do what we do, we just tell them, whenever we see a void, we'll fill it. If we see cops or the press not doing their job, we'll kind of jump in. It's in our nature to jump in. And that's what happened with the Ramsey case. But as our handles, how to reach us, I'm on Twitter, FrankZ2137.
And at In the Zeller.
And what's the tip line, Jim? What's that tip line? We haven't got a tip in a while, but you never know.
JBRtips@gmail.com. Yeah.
That's it.
All right. I'm putting that in the chat as we speak. JBRtips@gmail, correct?
Correct.
Thanks, guys. Yes, everyone is very, very thankful for the work that you guys have put in over the years. I find it absolutely fascinating. I want to know what made you two talk about this case? Did you just hear about it in the news, or how did that come about?
That came about, I was sitting in a bar in Hoboken, New Jersey. I was out drinking, and I was just chatting with the bartender, and it was late, and the bar was empty. And there was a replay of the news of, I think, the 11 o'clock news. And this was a few days after the murder, after the body was found. Mm-hmm. And it just caught my attention. I asked the bartender to turn it up. And it just, something didn't sit right with me. I mean, from just immediately looking at it, something just seemed off. Okay, so it was... they found this kid dead in the basement. It just didn't make sense. So I call my brother. I'm like, Jim, how about we ask a few questions? We dig around for a couple of days. That's how it started. I said, let's just dig around Boulder, ask a few questions, and see where it goes. And that's how we started. So we just started making phone calls in Boulder, and it didn't take very long, a couple of days at most. And it started with the librarian that my brother talked to. So Jim, take it away.
So this starts with a librarian in Boulder.
That's right.
Okay.
It starts with just calling, I always thought this, remember, this is right at the beginning of the internet. Right. So, this, the internet wasn't really a thing yet. This was just starting. So if you want to collect records or find out about a town, you go to your library because it's a town's memory.
Absolutely. Right?
That's where you get the information of your town. So I called the library in Boulder and I got a hold of a librarian. I'm not sure if she was the head librarian or whoever, but she was a librarian. And I just asked her straightforwardly. I said, I'm calling in regards to this case with this girl, JonBenet. And I said, has this ever happened before in your town? Is this a one-off? has this ever happened mm-hmm. in other cases? And she was like, well, things happen to our kids in Boulder that we don't like to talk about. But she goes, I'm starting to get uncomfortable with this phone call, so I'm going to let you go. So it was very brief, but just the way, you know, she came out and said, things happen to our kids in Boulder that we don't like to talk about. That's what she said. And I called my brother up and I said, you know, that's a bizarre thing to say. I said that we may need to do a little more digging here.
Wow.
And then we kept digging. And then shortly after that call, I talked to a mechanic in town, and he didn't have any direct knowledge, but he kept talking about, yeah, there have been rumors of child sexual abuse in this town for a long time.
Ooh.
So we're like, what the hell is going on? And meanwhile, the case, so we're doing this digging, and the case is unfolding as we're going. So as we're doing this,
It's playing out in the news, right?
Yeah, it's playing out in real time.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, people don't understand how fast this case moved. I mean, within 7 days, Patsy and John won Larry King Live on CNN, which was like the big talk show, news talk show back then.
Mm-hmm.
7 days. So it moved at lightning speed. It became a national, if not worldwide, story within a couple of weeks. And it just became more and more bizarre. And meanwhile, we're digging in the town. My brother talks to the librarian. I'm talking to the mechanic. And I'm like, and we devise a theory in probably January of 1997. And we say, okay, our theory is going to be this. We call it the sex ring theory. We said that John and Patsy Ramsey did not kill their child, but they were involved in something that led to the child's death. And because of what they were involved with, they helped cover it up. That was the theory.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we just kept on digging and we set a couple of goals. We said for our theory to be proven true, we would have to find a witness of some kind that would make accusations of child sexual abuse against John or Patsy or someone close to him. And if we could find that witness, and if we kept digging, we figured out that we would eventually come across a separate case, separate from the Ramsey case, that involved certain Ramsey players.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, to me, yeah. Frank, that seems like such a brilliant concept because we know birds of a feather flock together.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that one of them's bound to get caught sooner or later doing something, you know.
Right. But it was all about finding that witness in the beginning because it's just a theory.
Sure.
You know, everybody has a theory about the case, and that was just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kept on digging. And I think the first, if that was the theory in our heads and we were pretty certain about it, it became cemented to us as fact once we talked to a doctor in town, the name of Dr. Bob McFarland.
Okay.
And he was a doctor in town. I talked to somebody we were still digging, and I mentioned our theory of the case, and they said, oh, you should talk to Dr. Bob. You know, he performs a lot of free services for the runaways in Boulder, the homeless, you know, the addicted. You know, he's got a big heart, but he works with a lot of young adults. And that's how I got turned on to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first called Dr. Bob, you know, he was kind of standoffish at first because, you know, the media is all over the place. Everybody's asking questions. And then he asked me, I'm sorry, Jim.
No, I'm saying everyone's asking questions.
Oh, yeah.
They're asking the wrong questions.
Asking the wrong questions.
You know, right. Yeah, but go ahead, Frank. Sorry.
Yeah, and Doc, and once I told Dr. Bob my theory that, you know, John and Patsy didn't kill their kid, we think there was a sex ring operating in the town and, you know, maybe they were involved with it and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, you're pretty much spot on. You know, the quote that he said was, I have kids lined up around the block talking about child sexual abuse.
Jesus.
And that floored me. And I'm like, I was like taken aback. I'm like, what? And he just repeated it. He goes, you hurt me. You know, he goes, I have kids lined up around the block talking about child sexual abuse. And I was just stunned. And Dr. Bob, I mean, this is the first time I remember talking to him. And then he's begging me and my brother to come out there. Now, at the time, I'm working for UPS. Jim, I forget what you were doing.
I think it was post office at the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're like, I'm like, why do you need us? You got the entire media of the country in the town covering this case. Why don't you just go to them? He goes, I don't understand. And he's like, you're the only guys asking the right questions.
You know, if you've seen the series, the True Detective, the first season, where Russ Cole is giving the interview with the two policemen, and he's just looking at him. He's like, you know, if you want to find out what's going on, you got to start asking the right questions. You're asking the wrong questions. It was never just straight off who killed her. In order to find out who killed her, you had to ask what and why.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was something that you told me. You know, you guys were like, it's not who we want to stress, it's what and why. And I think that's what we need to keep in mind as we all listen today.
Yeah, I mean, and so that was the call with Dr. Bob, and then it just proceeded from there, and then we just started digging up more information. And then over the next few years, we were finding out so much that the theory changed from the sex ring theory to what we call the Boulder syndrome. There was something seriously wrong with the town of Boulder, and had been for long before that murder.
Yeah,
and you're right. The question. Everybody's been asking the wrong question for 28 years. Who? That is wrong. This is a complex case. And who is the wrong answer? That's the final step. First, why is this case unsolved? That's question one. Why is it still unsolved all these years later? And question two, the most important question, is what was going on in the town prior to the murder, and did it have a role in JonBenet's death?
Yeah.
Answer that. And that will explain why the case is still unsolved. And once you do those two things, then you can ask who. Sorry, Jim.
No, that's okay. It's just that Boulder was, you know, you look at that book, Perfect Murder, Perfect Town. And, you know, the more we kept on looking into Boulder, as my brother said, it was rotten underneath. There was something seriously disturbing, you know, in the town itself for decades. And a lot of it had to do with child sexual abuse. And the more we looked at it, we were saying, wow, you know, JonBenet is not just, she's not just this one tragic case. She's symptomatic of what's going on. She's a microcosm.
So in your opinion, do you think that she was intentionally killed, or do you think it was an accident that went too far with the essay?
I mean, we don't know exactly what happened. We're not the killers. We weren't there to witness it, but I believe it's like Cyril Wecht described it as a sex game gone awry.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was thinking. Ugh, awful. And
that's what we believe happened. And, see, the whole, what we're trying to do is my brother bringing up Schiller's book is a good entrance for that. All we are trying to do is provide context. Mm. When you have a story, you have to have the proper context. I mean, what does context even mean? It's a set of circumstances to give you a full understanding of a particular event. That's context. Everybody skipped that with the Ranji case. The media, I think we are to this day still the only ones to look at the town of Boulder, because we ran this we ran our investigation differently than the cops. We could tell that everything was screwed up from Jump Street, and this case was not going to get solved via traditional means, where cops are going to work this case from the inside out. We said we got to do the opposite. We have to work it from the outside in and eventually find another case that connects to the Ramsey case. And it's that secondary case which is going to be the only way to solve this crime. If you don't have the proper context, you don't understand. It's like you're reading a book and you jump in halfway. You may eventually catch on to the plot, but you may be viewing the characters at who are, you may say, okay, this guy's a hero, this guy's a villain in the book, when really it's the other way around because you didn't read the first half. So you don't have the proper context. We went back into Boulder's past and what was going on before her murder. And we believe once you have that context, you'll see the case in a different light. Everybody always describes this case as bizarre, strange, weird. Nothing makes sense. I don't understand. It's the same thing over and over. That's because you don't have the proper context. And with our information, we believe that some of those questions that people have, they can fill the gaps and the case starts to make a little more sense.
Very well put. Very well put. So did you guys uncover a secondary case? How do you want to go into that?
Well, it's
that's a little down the road,
okay,
I think.
Okay, you know. I'm getting ahead of you.
that's like
you guys
that's
take
like
the reins. You got the floor.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you know it's strange that True Detective, the first season, kind of mirrors how we did it. In the first season of True Detective, they're trying to solve a murder and the lead detective, Russ Cole, goes into the past to find other cases to help solve his. So you're working in multiple timelines. So not only are we trying to work at the time in present time with how the investigation's unfolding, we're also going into the past and going over past cases and what the hell was going on with Boulder. So you have the librarian, we got the mechanic, we have our theory, and now Bob McFarlane tells us that he's got kids lined up around the block. So I give my number to Bob, and I said, you know, Bob, feel free to give the number out, you know, to whoever you think has information. And after that phone call, I think over the next several weeks, I received calls every night talking to kids who were I'm talking about young adults who had experienced child sexual, you know, they were molested. And that was our first taste of the Boulder Police Department. All these kids were terrified to go to the police. Now, while they didn't give me a ton of information because they were curious and a little bit scared to be dealing with me, they didn't know who I was. The only reason they even dealt with me was because I was all the way across the country. But they started telling me things about businesses in the town. One phrase used was business in the front, party in the back with kids.
Oh my God.
Some of them mentioned a judge. They didn't mention that judge's name, but they were absolutely terrified of the police. So after hearing these kids talk like that, we were already extremely wary of the Boulder Police Department. Jen?
I'm here. Or did you say Jen?
Oh, no, I said Jen.
Oh, I thought you said Jen.
No, sorry.
That's okay.
What's that, Frank? I just broke up a little bit.
Oh, I just said you want to pick up. You want to
No, I broke up on that last part where you left off.
Oh, with Dr. Bob, just dealing with the kids that were calling me, that Bob gave my number to some of the kids who had suffered abuse. Mm. And over the next several weeks, and that pretty much cemented, you know, our distrust of the Boulder Police Department, that we felt that there was something definitely wrong with the department. So we just kept the case. So we just continued to search for that witness in Boulder. So for the next 3 years, from 97 to 2000, we were searching high and low in Boulder for that witness that we needed to prove our theory true, somebody to make an accusation.
Wow.
Now we were hearing, you know, we heard from some of the McFarland kids about things going on in the town. We started hearing names of people. We got the name of a city official early on, and child pornography.
Oh, Lord.
What we were finding is that, you know, child pornography, pedophilia was rampant in Boulder. Yeah. You know, it was all over the place in all different institutions, you know, from city officials, you know, to sheriff's department, to businesses, businessmen. This is what we were digging up while looking for this witness to come forward. And we were looking locally, of course, but lo and behold, this witness that we were looking for doesn't come from Boulder. She comes from out of state. She comes from California and says, basically, you know, I was, you know, how JonBenet was abused happened to me. And matter of fact, the people that were in that was involved in my abuse out in California played a part in JonBenet's death.
Whoa.
So she comes from California making these accusations, but she was under therapeutic care, and the therapist was like, no, what she's saying is valid. So we were looking locally in Boulder, and she comes from out of state.
Yeah. And the thing with her is that her accusations specifically mentioned someone close to the Ramseys, specifically two men, Fleet White Sr., and Fleet White Jr., Fleet White Sr. being the father of Fleet Jr. being one of the best friends of John Ramsey, whose house JonBenet was over the night she died at the park. Mm-hmm. So we're like, boom. There we go.
La, 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 okay. La, la.
That's goal number one. We said a witness would come, and it did. And that's the kind of thing that can make that can put you on a 28-year odyssey. When you start predicting the future of the case and how it unravels, it doesn't mean you're psychic. It just means you're right.
It means you're on the right track, huh?
Or it means you're on the right track. So now our theory has got some weight behind it. And in the meantime, in between, we were calling producers, reporters, so many people back then during that 3-year stretch. And, you know, we were just abused for 3 years. Everybody laughed at us, scorned at us. Mocked us.
Really?
Nobody took us seriously, because remember, there was no Twitter. There was no YouTube. All we had to deal with was the mainstream press. And for whatever reason, the information we were trying to give to reporters, you know, some of the cases that we were coming across, saying, hey, look at this case. Look at the, you know, which we'll get into. Mm-hmm. But we're finding out all these cases and we're like, this is there. It's in the open. Why is nobody looking into this? Like, the media just chose not to look at that part.
Of course.
They just wanted Boulder to be that perfect town that Lauren Schiller wrote, perfect murder, perfect town, when it was the it's a false narrative. It was never the case. That city had a huge pedophile problem for decades.
Well, you know what's crazy, guys? If you think about it now, you know, think back to, like, if this happened now, I mean, it seems like the part about her assault, her being assaulted with that paintbrush, has really not been talked about. It's like that, I mean, the way she was brutalized has kind of been ignored in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like just a murder of a little girl. Like, there's a lot more to it that makes it so much darker than just a murder of a little girl. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand. It's because people, you know, they don't want to look that close, especially when it's a child.
You're right.
You know, they know that she died and that's enough. But to get to the truth, you have to understand it. Her head was fractured from the back of her skull nearly to the front.
Yeah, bam.
Like, her head was like split.
I think they said it was like an 8-inch gash in her head.
It was, it ran from the back of her head all the way to nearly the front of her head. So the amount of force to crack her skull like that was huge. The garrote was furrowed so deep into her neck, it's like you almost had to use tweezers to get the rope out. That's how she was strangled.
You know, hearing John describe that in the documentary that just came out, or the series, how he said he couldn't even grab it because it was so deeply embedded in his daughter's neck.
Mm. And that's true. Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, you know, she was violated with the other half of the, of the paintbrush.
Right.
That was used as the garrote. So
her hands were also tied behind her back, I think, too.
Well, you know, we're never really going to know the truth of how she was found, because John Ramsey's the one that found her and disturbed the crime scene. So,
yeah, what we were asking and what we were touching on, especially back in the early years, mainstream media was not going there.
Uh-uh.
You know, sexual abuse of a child with possibly multiple players involved, you know,
right,
with two or more people involved in sexual abuse is what you would categorize as a child sex ring, or to that nature. I mean, that's what we were putting out there.
Yeah. They didn't bust these dudes back then like they do now.
I mean, you mentioned child sex ring back then. People look at you like you were crazy.
Right. It was a big conspiracy, then, right? It would have been a conspiracy. Correct.
But nowadays, they call it human trafficking.
Right.
We still use the old term. It was right around, like, it really switched when True Detective got so popular that, like, child sex rings became a thing and people started looking up old cases and stuff because the show became so popular.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly weren't task forces back then that were busting these guys.
And speaking of which, True Detective Season 1 was loosely based off of a true case in what, Louisiana?
Oh, yeah. That was the LaMonica case. Mm-hmm. And it's very strange because the LaMonica case in 2005 was the case I was using to show Lou Smith and Ramsey private investigator Ollie Gray on what was going on in the town. And it's funny that True Detective wound up loosely basing its story on the LaMonica case in Louisiana.
Interesting.
Yeah. But let's go back to Nancy. So, you know, it's for people who aren't aware of Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been a bigger story. It was written about locally But once again, mainstream media did not touch it. You have somebody coming forward making child sexual abuse allegations against the best friend, one of the best friends of John Ramsey, whose house this little girl was at. So me and my brother are, you know, excited as all get out because our first goal has been met. That witness has been found. We just didn't find her. She wound up contacting an attorney in Boulder, and his name was Lee Hill. So we thought, all right, you know, we're going to have to call this guy quick because all this stuff that we're learning about the town now, which now we got to warn this attorney, whatever you do, don't bring her to the Boulder Police Department because there's something wrong there. So we had to call him. And it was a quick phone call. And it's that phone call to this day, me and Lee Hill are friends, you know, 24 years after that phone call. And it was pretty much went like this. Are you Lee Hill? Yeah. Who's this? My name's Frank Zell. You representing that witness from California? Yeah. And I go, well, let me guess. Now I have worked these types of cases prior to Ramsey. So I already had a basic profile. So I just listed, I said, let me guess, she's got multiple personality disorder. She has injuries to her private areas. The abuse was ritualistic in nature. She's got multiple family members involved. And he was like, how do you know all this? And I'm like, that's for later. I said, whatever you do, do not bring her to the Boulder Police Department. And he's like, we just brought her there a few days ago. And then I said, Mr. Hill, two things are going to happen. One, they're not going to properly investigate Nancy's claims. And number two, if they can't discredit her, they're going to come after you. And that's how we left that phone call. And then I got to watch over the next 2 or 3 years, that attorney's life get torn apart until the point where he had to flee the country.
You're kidding.
I kid you not. Now, before Lee flees the country, now we're jumping in time to around 2003. The Boulder police have already...
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
ended their investigation into Nancy. It was a several week investigation in 2000. They did nothing. Jim, tell the story about Lee being shocked about how the Boulder police handled Nancy's whereabouts.
Oh yeah. Lee was sheltering, trying to keep her sheltered and, because for what she was saying happened to her, especially, what was going on in California, and they didn't want anybody to know her whereabouts because she came to Boulder and Lee was hiding her out. And basically the Boulder Police Department gets in contact with Nancy's family, tells her where she's at, what's going on, her location, and these are the people Nancy was fleeing from. And so Lee was like, what the hell are you guys doing here? It's like, you don't do that. It's like, you don't, I'm trying to keep her safe. She's fleeing from abusers, and you're telling the people who are possibly involved in her abuse where she is. So that's how the Boulder Police Department handled Nancy. And they never said Nancy, Nancy was lying. They just said that what we see, her abuse doesn't connect to the Ramsey's case, because Nancy's allegations and Nancy's claims, she sent people to jail in California for abuse.
Yeah, Mackie Boykin. And for those, the reason why her story connects, to us and to Lee, because when Lee was contacted, he went out there originally to California to interview her and her therapist. He came back to Boulder and he was saying, oh my goodness, she's a legit witness. She's got real information. She's got evidence connecting herself to the whites. And then next thing you know, he gets a phone call from Nancy and the therapist, and they're like, hey, we're getting threats out here. We're not waiting. We're on our way to you. And that's how it started. And so they came forward, then Lee brings them to the police.
You're awesome.
Of course, they notify, California authorities, which Lee asked them not to do because the family was looking for Nancy. The family was threatening Nancy and the therapist. So the Boulder police totally botched that.
Are they the ones that gave Nancy a deposition with her lawyer?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
OK, because I've read her deposition online. You guys can read it if you search it up. Her deposition transcript is out there.
It's out there.
And at first, remember, Fleet White Jr. said this lady is a crackpot. There's no connection to her and our family until Nancy showed photographs of her mom, Gwen, who's the goddaughter of Fleet White Sr.,
which is his father. Showing,
correct. And so there was, and then he had to back off of that and said, oh, yeah. We do know her.
Wow.
So But it's the story that she told, Now, this is where it may get a little gruesome for some people.
Yeah, trigger warning, guys.
This is this case, and when you're dealing with sex rings, this is the stuff that you gotta, you gotta deal with, unfortunately. But her story is that, she was being trained, along with other kids, to sexually please adults from the age of 3 on.
Ugh.
And this stuff went on her entire life. And the man who was considered the family trainer was Mackie Boykin. He was an expert in the garage.
What's his name?
Mackie Boykin.
Okay. Is he the one that went to jail?
Yeah, he's the one that eventually goes to jail for rape.
Oh, my goodness.
Because Nancy was so, somebody did the right thing in the school system because she was so messed up, so banged up that, they knew something was terribly wrong. And then that led to the police being called, and Mackie was then, you know, was eventually charged, and I think he pled guilty to rape.
Gosh, poor but Nancy. The story is,
oh yeah, it's a horrible story. And she talked about that, you know, they would have these parties around the holidays. And, you know, the garrote would be used. And if you didn't act according to how they wanted you to act, you were punished by being hit on the head.
Good Lord.
I mean, you see now, the parallels, right?
Yeah,
parallels.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, I've never heard of a garrote being used before this case, and never since.
Well, I think we've discussed this on other podcasts. Once again, turn your volume down if you don't want to hear this type of stuff, because this is going to be
why they use it. Why they use it?
Yeah, there's a reason. It's an execution device. That's what a garrote is. But for the pedophile, it's a sexual torture device, because what you're doing is you're hitting that spot in the neck that controls breathing. So you can tighten it and loosen it. So you're allowing your victim to breathe, and then you're shutting off the supply. And what you're trying to do is put the, you know, from the pedophile perspective, is put the victim in the sweet spot between life and death, where the body spasms. And to the pedophile, that in their heads, that is a sexual reaction to what they're doing. That's why they use it. But if you make a mistake, you're going to kill your victim. So that's that. But Nancy's story, so that's, you know, she's saying, hey, I had the garrote used on me. It was around the holidays. People involved in my abuse, the allegations were Fleet White Sr. and Fleet White Jr. Fleet White Jr. obviously connects to John. It's whose house JonBenet was at, you know, the night she died. So, yeah, she had a good reason to come forward. And she also shared with the Boulder Police Department evidence of child pornography that was buried on her family's property.
Yes, I was just going to bring
what?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was some evidence that was given to the Boulder Police. Hey, all you got to do is go there. They got it buried.
God, you know, almighty.
And part of it, you know, she was child pornography was made with her and other kids. They would have these parties with adults where these kids, Nancy included, would be pimped out to customers. And this stuff was being filmed, and they would keep the film on the property in these barrels. That's what Nancy said. It's on the property. So what does the Boulder Police do but notify them and give them a 10-day heads up that they're coming out? That make any sense?
None.
No. So, like, you know, like I said, so that's why she came forward, because of the parallels. Her allegations against the whites, her proof of knowing the whites.
And she was ridiculed, basically.
Well, online, it was very divisive. Now, you know, once again, now we're in 2000. The Ramsey case is the granddaddy of true crime. That's what I've always called it, because the internet wasn't around. And at the time, by the time Nancy came forward, it's 2000. So you had, at this point, hundreds of message boards. You didn't have Twitter, so people created forums. Mm-hmm. And on these forums, you would have people who would join, and they would leave posts, kind of like Twitter. And you could respond back and forth, and it became a big deal. There were some very popular forums. There were like dozens, if not hundreds of them. But the most popular ones then were, you know, Justice Watch, Forums for Justice. Justice Watch being a very popular one. You had the people from the DA's office were members, cops.
Oh, wow.
It was bonkers. Now, we've always stayed away from that to the best of my ability. You know, to the best of our ability, we tried to stay away. You know, the first 4 years of this case, I didn't even have a computer. I worked it with just a phone.
Old school.
Yeah, old school.
And about as old school as you can get right there.
And then if I needed to, I went to the library, you know, to do research, you know, or somebody that had a computer. That's and then awesome. Once I got a computer in 2000, it became easier. But the Nancy case, to go back to Nancy, ended several weeks after a Boulder police, quote unquote, investigation, which pretty much consisted of them finding any way they could to discredit Nancy. They thought she was crazy. They were calling her a whack job behind the scenes. And when they ended it, they held a press conference. And it pretty much stated that the Nancy story, that my brother said, did not connect to the case, which I never understood, because if she had a connection to the case. But the abuse she says that took place in California should be investigated by other authorities, namely the FBI. That was the end of the, you know, that was pretty much their statement when they ended the investigation.
And just as a side note, if people want to read a little more about Lee Hill and his time with the witness, there is a an article by Westword written by Stephen Jackson called The Accidental Jurist. It's a very, very good article.
Yeah, you'll learn more about Lee and the witness in that article.
I just found it. I'll put the link in chat for everybody if you want to bookmark it.
Yeah, extremely, extremely well written. The author's name is Stephen Jackson, if I remember. Great writer. But, yeah, and that ended the Nancy part of the investigation. And the funny thing is that the day they held that press conference to end the part of that part of the investigation, Lee Hill calls me up in tears, crying, extremely upset. And it's tough for a guy, you know, listening to another man cry. It's uncomfortable. You don't want to hear it. And I was trying to calm him down. I'm like, geez, Lee, I'm like, what the hell happened at the press conference? I mean, right. I know it ended.
Yeah.
But I mean, why are you so upset? And he's like, they threatened me. I'm like, what? And he's like, a member, I know who it was, but I'm not going to say the name, but a member of the Boulder Police Department took Lee Hill aside and said, now you're going to keep your mouth shut. And if you don't keep it shut, we're going to ruin you professionally and financially.
Yeah.
And that freaked him out so much. By the time he got home, he was in tears. And that's when he called me. And the funny thing is, that's exactly what happened to him.
Is that when he left?
By the time it was said and done for Lee Hill, he was facing a year in jail. You know, look, Lee, I always called Lee a flawed hero. You know, nobody's perfect. He had problems, and, you know, he had some domestic issues, which, of course, once the Boulder police knew it was him, it made it that much worse. He was arrested for one thing, he was caught with dangerous weapons. That was one of the charges.
Oh my goodness.
He had a knife collection. That was his own knife collection.
Wow.
It was in a case, but they saw it. It was any way just to make things worse for him. He got himself into a little trouble. They exasperated to make it worse.
Sure.
And when it was all said and done with the misdemeanor charges, he was facing a year. And then he calls me up. He was like, I'm out. I'm done. He goes, I'm sending you some documents. I'm going to send some other people some stuff. And he goes, I'll touch base with you when I'm in Asia. And that's where he fled to, Asia. And, you know, I waited. Yeah, I waited and I get a package. And that's from Lee. And I got some Nancy documents. One is a psych report from her case in California with Mackie Boykin, how a psychiatrist interviewed her, saying, oh yeah, you know, she's sane. She doesn't have a mental disorder. And as a matter of fact, later on down the line, she's going to recall even more information. sort of psychiatrist back there back then. But there was one thing I got, and it was a poem. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually Lee Hill reached out to me, and I said, Lee, I got this poem here. And he's like, oh, yeah, man. He goes, I received a couple of those. He goes, I think they got something to do with the murder. He goes, try to get that into the right hands. And, you know, he goes, I'll be in touch down the line. So I'm looking at it. The poem doesn't have a name, but it mentions the names of three individuals. And it's extremely well written. I don't know if you want to bring that poem up for your viewers.
Yeah, did you email it to me?
I sent it
to
you.
Oh, you sent it on X. That's right. Okay. I was looking at my email. Yeah, I'll pull it up right now. Go ahead and keep going.
It's in your DMs. So, I mean, we could wait, you know, till you pull it up.
Yeah.
There were actually two poems, but, you know, we're going to deal with the one that I received.
The entire three men?
That's the one.
Okay.
I kind of gave it the name, the three men poem, because, you know, it mentions three men at the end.
All right, let me pull it up here. This is Mr. Frank Z on Twitter, or on X, rather. See if I can't make it bigger. You want to read it?
Oh, that's as big as it gets, huh?
No, I've got...
Oh, okay.
Is that better?
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay,
man.
Cool.
So I gave a little recap on my Twitter post saying that a Boulder attorney received two anonymous poems in the mail in 2003 as the Boulder attorney prepared to leave the country. He sends one poem to me, the three men poem, and the other poem to author Stephen Singular, which was the Manchurian doll. Also in 2003. Okay, yeah, so we'll get to the Lou Smith thing. I called somebody in Colorado after I talked to Lee, and I'm reading them the poem, and they're like, wow, that's an interesting poem. Do you mind if I share this with somebody? You know, if I tell people about this poem? I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I didn't expect to, you know, to hear anything back. And then a couple of days later, my phone rings. I pick up the phone. I'm like, hello. And it's like, he's like, I hear this nice old, you know, this nice older guy go, hi, I'm Lou Smith.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, hey, Lou. He goes, I hear you have a poem. So, you know, I read him the poem. And it was his interest in the poem. He actually pleaded with me for a copy of it. And that's when I knew I had something. That's when I knew that this went from something interesting. This isn't somebody crazy. Because, you know, the internet's full of crazy people. This could have been somebody who wrote a nice poem, threw three people's names in there, and oh, that's the killer. I didn't know. But when Lou took it seriously, that's when I knew we had something. So...
I bet.
So this is the poem. It's the three men poem. And just go back down a little bit. Yeah, because this is how it starts right here. Perfect. So this is not the author of the original poem. Recidivism is my only concern. You are the only one who has a copy of this. Please respect my anonymity. People who abuse children are terrorists too. In the spirit of Crazy Horse, it's all connected. Do you want me to continue to read it?
Sure.
Okay. In his cocky reverie, the truth the three would carry to the steps of the authority to boast of their pernicious spree. But he did not know that I could see and therefore was not wary. For hidden in the rectory, protected by the church decree, he delved in child pornography while elders professed not to see His sister told him it could be. He killed the child in honesty. His secret would not bury. Now, that based on true events is something added by me.
Get to it a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll explain, but pretty much these stanzas were proven true. True events.
From
they
the
did
church?
Not know he changed. Yeah, well, it doesn't mention the name of a church. It just says, it just hints to that this is something that happened at a church. They did not know he changed the key when police would come to query, so they broke and entered quietly, though he would claim illicitly. And so, avoiding calumny, a grand sum he was paid to flee, and so it was conveniently their questions he would parry, based on true events. To solve a tale of misconstrued, just look into the Offman's pew. You'll find there in Fort Lumpton Slough, stray cats aplenty, skinned a few. On prying stoops their hides did strew, and cat's blood will scare daughters too, based on true events. While bushes hid their sins from view, Richard held the cue. Okay, this particular stanza that I just read, when it says, look into the Offman's pew, so start there. On prying stoops, their hides did strew. Now, there were three events that happened to police officers early on in the Ramsey case. Detective Steve Thomas, considered, you know, one of the lead detectives. Linda Arndt, who was there when the body was found. And Bob Whitson, who took control of the scene in the afternoon. Whitson's story, what happened to Whitson is not hinted to in the poem, but what happened to Thomas and Linda Arndt is. Right after they got put on the case, a cat that was mutilated, which was pretty much turned inside out, was thrown on his porch.
What?
That's what that refers to. What says, stray cats aplenty, skinned a few.
Yeah.
On prying stoops, their hides did strew. That refers to what happened to Steve Thomas. And cat's blood will scare daughters too, because Linda Arndt had cat blood thrown all over her front door.
And that was the officer that was there during the day that had no control over the scene. There were so many people, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So that's what's happening.
Wow.
So Thomas and Arndt. I think actually Thomas writes about it in his book. So now Bob Whitson, he got it the worst. He had bullets fired into his home. No investigation done by the Boulder Police Department of a member of their own force fired upon in their home to the point where he came out of his home with his weapon drawn. His own department never did an investigation. What department does that?
Sounds like a department that's owned by the elite there in that town.
Now, it's a lot of people don't know this. Some people do. A lot of people don't. I knew it when it first happened. And I was like, oh, my goodness, they're going after the cops. And this is now people find it. Oh, that's unbelievable. It's not really. If people follow the Epstein saga, Jeffrey Epstein, the editor of Vanity Fair conducted an interview with Jeffrey Epstein that, you know, before all his troubles really went crazy, and they were putting stuff in the article that they were writing about sexual abuse. Jeffrey Epstein took offense and called the editor. And the editor tells this story. It's been written about. You can look it up for yourself. He said that he told Epstein, no, I'm not taking anything out. Epstein said, okay, that's fine. And then one day he went home and he found a severed cat's head on his doorstep next to a single bullet.
Good God.
He has no doubt that that was Jeffrey Epstein. So
it's obvious
that somebody in the community was targeting or trying to intimidate the Boulder Police Department or members of it. Whitson getting it the worst. But the fact that the department did no investigation into a shooting of an officer's home is mind-boggling. No department would act like that. Okay, so we continue. The child must die, he did decide. The crime arranged, the ritual plied. With church at stake and family pride, three men he chose to enter. Though two decried this church a lie, their testimony was denied. With ties that run both deep and wide, no one could defend her. Now some have gone and some have stayed. Class defined the roles they played. Someday you'll know the masquerade of Zach, the great pretender. The three men, Mervyn Pugh, husband of Linda Hoffman Pugh. Blank, member of St. John's Episcopal Church. John Rossi, I only know his name. Zach set it up, Dick called the FBI. There are people involved with far more power than Fleet. End of poem. So it went from being this, you know, what is this poem, to Lou begging me for it. And that's when I knew that those three names were important to Lou. You know, everybody knows, you know, if you follow the case, who Mervyn is. The blank name that we can't mention, I had vaguely remembered it, but not many people know it, hardly anybody. Well, at the time, yeah. And then John Rossi, well, nobody knew. It took us years to find out about him. And then the other poem was the Manchurian Doll poem. I don't know if you want to bring that up.
Yeah, hold on. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, take your time.
So this Zach set it up, Dick called the FBI. Is there any like more clarity on that?
I wish we could get more clarity, but you know, we've only proven, you know, I'm not going to I don't like to speculate. The only reason I can put based on true events is because we found further corroboration that matched those standards from other individuals. So
yeah, I guess, Frank, you have to kind of lead into, you know, when you got the poems, and you know, you're probably going to have to go into Miles at this point.
I mean, do you want me to read the other poem first? Do I need, you know, what do you want me to do?
Which poem? I'm trying to find it. You sent me three things here.
Yeah, the other, it's called the Manchurian Doll.
I think you sent me the three men poem twice. And then I have DNA in Doubt, flashback 2016.
Yeah, well, that's if we were going to talk about the DNA. Oh, you know what? I did. I sent it to you.
You sent me. I'm sorry. No, it's okay. You sent me the three men twice. That's all.
Yeah, let me just quickly.
Have you guys?
My brother is. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. I was just going to ask everybody if they've hit the like button yet tonight. Go ahead, Jim. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You know, and no, that's fine. And as this is going on, and as we're, you know, as my brother receives these poems, and Lou Smith is, you know, pleading with him for copies of this, we're continuing on the other side, digging up more information regarding Boulder itself. You know, so not only do you have these poems, but we're finding more cases that just show what was happening in Boulder for decades. And you know, they start off with, you know, there are several cases you can look at, you know, from David Slusher in the 70s, who was, you know, pretty much a prolific pedophile who was molesting, who pretty much approached entire children at Boy Scout troops. You know, his information was released during the Boy Scout scandal. And when we were looking at some of that, we figured we'd find somebody involved with Boulder. That's how we came across David Slusher. He was a prolific pedophile in Boulder, a child pornographer. And when we had received the affidavits on his case, you know, some of the evidence, you know, what's written in the affidavit, it would say something to the effect of this, that he approached so many children in the Boy Scout troops. So many lives were affected. There were so many kids that were abused that, you know, we couldn't investigate them all, which is strange in and of itself. That those were from the detective notes, that there were so many kids involved that they couldn't investigate them all. But what we found was, in some instances, in some of the abuse cases by David Slusher, the parents were actually involved in promoting the relationship with David Slusher. In other words, pimping out their kids. Mm-hmm. And what you see in Boulder is that type of behavior.
Sick.
Over and over of you know, parental involvement, of you know, giving over of children to pedophiles. And, you know, they could have put away Slusher for years and years and years, but they didn't. That's the thing. That guy got light sentencing. You know, people came forward in Boulder. You had professors from the college, other attorneys come forward saying, oh, no, you don't. This guy shouldn't get any jail time at all. He's a great guy. You know, he was not a great guy, and he got light sentences. And plea deals, which was rampant in Boulder, what you would see more and more as the cases that we were uncovering were these crazy plea deals that were given in child abuse cases.
Sick.
And sex abuse cases. That Slusher got off over and over again. He got minimal jail time. He'd be re-released, and then he would offend again, go back to jail, re-released. You go get offend again, over and over again. You would see this pattern in Boulder. So the David Slusher case was one. There's another case called the Bruce Downsborough case. Bruce Downsborough was arrested in, I think it was 2013, in Tennessee, and he was involved in something called Operation Spade, where they were investigating a company called Azov Films. It was a Canadian company. And what they were doing was they were distributing child torture pornography.
Oh, my God.
And he was caught up in that. Another guy who was arrested in that was the U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander's chief of staff. His name was Jesse Ryan Larskin. But Larskin killed himself when he was out on bail.
Wow.
But anyway, the owner of Azov.
You guys
Films,
are blowing my mind.
Yeah. The owner of
it's a lot worse.
The owner of Azov Films was arrested, and it was like 350 people were arrested worldwide. 400 children were rescued in the operation. Downsborough, but he had like 20,000 images of child pornography on his computer, and toddlers forced and all types of sex acts. But here's the thing. He was arrested in Tennessee, but Downsborough lived in Boulder in 1986. You know, he worked for the university there. He was a lawyer, and he practiced law actually until 1986. And he actually molested two boys in Boulder, and he was guilty of sexual assault on a child and sexual assault in the third degree. And what was the result of his offense in Boulder? No jail time, nothing. And he said that he committed other crimes that he got away with.
He bragged to the Tennessee investigators that he got away with molesting other kids that he never got caught for.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. An interesting thing about Downsboro, you know, John Ramsey, you know, Axis Graphics was a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin. Okay. And in the 90s, Lockheed Martin was the United States number one defense contractor.
Yeah.
Right. In 1986, the number one defense contractor was HRB Singer. And the president of the company in 1986 was George Downsboro, Bruce's father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he didn't go to jail.
Wow. I think this is truly a case where they say there's tentacles. There are tentacles.
This may be a point since we've made the switch to cases, that we stick with the cases, because we can go back to the poems. Because this is something that I want to touch on.
Okay.
The Netflix documentary, you know, vilifies the cops. But the DA's office doesn't take really any heat. The DA's office is a major culprit in this case. They're a major villain. Hunter, Mary Keenan, who was his right-hand woman, they created a culture in Boulder with absolute ridiculous plea bargains in horrific pedophile cases, some resulting in minimal jail time, some resulting in no jail time. Huh. And we'll get to stories about pedophiles that were just protected, even from arrest.
So this was the same DA throughout this whole mess that refused, even after the grand jury indictment, refused to prosecute and go forward.
Yeah, and the next case we're going to touch on is going to give you an example. Look, Hunter was a compromised guy. You know, he was elected to office, I think, in 72 or 74. He ran on being tough on crime and then switched positions and took this ultra-liberal stance on just being soft on crime, including pedophiles.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.